Hello and welcome to the Comic Cast, Ireland's number one comics.
The Republic's.
The Republic's.
Number one comic podcast.
Just to be clear about that. I'm Liam.
I'm Craig. And we're here with a panel, I guess, we did at the Irish 24-Hour Comics Day.
Yes.
That was called. I keep thinking there's another word after day.
Yeah.
24-Hour Comics Day.
Because I keep thinking Irish is in it, but it's not really.
Oh, okay.
It's 24-Hour Comics Day, and we spent the whole day there.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking to everybody, and then
getting in the way.
yeah.
Poking people. Hey, what are you drawing? What are you drawing? Leave me alone.
And then at the end of the day, we hosted a live panel in front of
a huge audience of easily a million people.
Yes, easily a million people. A few select heads who were there.
Tommy Kelly was there.
Declan Shalvey.
Patty Lynch. Katie Blackwood.
Gary Shanley.
There was tons of people. We should have started naming people.
Yeah, we should have forgotten. Niall Kitson.
Lou Geffen.
Brilliant. So we did this panel. It's just kind of a guide to
an idiot's guide, I believe he's called
it. To if you want to get started in small press or web comics.
Yeah, and so I guess we got there with who was with the panel with? It was Paddy Brown,
Philip Barrett, and Hilary Lawler.
Yes, Hilary Lawler. And we asked them about their experiences on small press web comics for the web,
and
as well as print.
Sounded a bit like this.
Hello and welcome to the Comcast, live in the Central Hotel in Dublin on 24-Hour Comics Day.
Woo! Hey!
It sounds like there's a lot more people than there actually is. It's just in the reverse. There's actually loads of people. On our panel today, we have Philip Barrett, Paddy Brown, and Hilary Lawler.
Hey!
Okay.
Hey!
Bear in mind for our audience, this is going to be going out on the Comic Cast, so some of the stuff, everybody here, I think, kind of knows each other more or less, but we'll just give a quick kind of summary of everybody. At the very end there is Philip Barrett, who's a comics artist and writer of Lint, Black Shapes, Gazebo, and myself, a Crack in the Shell, and even a webcomic, Wage Slave. Then we have, right beside me is Patrick Bram, who is, again, a writer and an artist from Belfast, who came all the way from Belfast today to be with us, who works on the Cattle Raid of Cooley, which is a webcomic, available on his website and also in print, as you can see here, from paddybrown.co.uk. And then we have Hilary Lawler, who's an artist who belongs to the Longstone Comics Group, or Collective, and the creator and illustrator of Super Hilbo, about pint-sized hero, and she launched issue one this year at the 2D Comics Festival, and I think issue two is probably along the way pretty soon.
Yeah, very much so. It's kind of 2010. It's been pushed to 2010. Optimistic.
And you also have like a new kind of collection that just came out, and they came from outer space.
That's right. Yeah. Next, your hand on it there. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this panel is all about getting started in small press and web comics, and so it's kind of like. Like an idiot's guide. And so certainly our questions will be somewhat on the idiotic. Idiotic. Well, there you go. So just kind of for people who haven't, ever done this before, maybe have, but they don't know the exact ins and outs, et cetera, et cetera. But just before we started, we just want to talk a little bit, just kind of mini interviews maybe with everybody. If we could start with you, Phil, on maybe how you got started in comics.
I got started in comics. I'd been doing comics on and off for a few years. I suppose when you get started, it's when you sort of put the first thing out into the world, I suppose. And I did that. I did a web comic, a sort of a weekly three panel to a page strip for in a place I was working at one stage. That was how I started, and I collected them, and that was sort of the first. Collected them and photocopied. And that was the Crack in the Shell that you mentioned, which was the first thing I put out, and I did that with a friend. So how I got started was I sort of conned myself into it without thinking of trying to make a 28-page magnum opus or anything. Yeah. I just started doing one-page strips or three-panel strips and collected them all together.
And, where did you go from there, like, after starting at that? Like, how did that Did the production of that give you any kind of encouragement? You know, was it easy or hard?
Well, it was probably the first thing that went completely through the cycle in terms of actually going, because it's one thing doing it and photocopying it, but it's quite another thing getting it into shops and getting people to get it and getting feedback on it, which is another essential aspect. And so it didn't, it was the first thing that actually went the complete turn, and I didn't really realise anything to do with the shop stuff, and that was pure trial and error, asking places and noticing that other shops had books and so on and so forth. But then when I got my first piece of feedback off it, off someone I didn't know, that was sort of like it had, you know, it had become something else in itself out in the world. It wasn't just someone telling you, oh, your book's great, like.
Yeah. And I guess, well, the same thing to you, Hilary, as well. What was your first kind of involvement in comics?
I think the 2D Festival in 2008 would have been the first proper investment of time into a comic. Previously, I was engaged in some activity with comics, but not very active. So this was the first time that I put something together that was, for me anyway, I suppose, putting pencil to paper and really starting at the beginning and having a middle and having somewhat of an end and publishing it. It was my first piece, so I can't say that it was fantastic, but it was certainly a start. So from a point of view of putting it together as a group and putting something out there, it would have been the first thing that we would have done officially in that capacity from the Longstone Group, also for myself individually. So that would have been it, really, to start with. And then since then, obviously, the confidence has grown. You look back, you learn from your mistakes, but you grow from it and you move forward. So I think we've put out much better pieces, much more of a professional standard since then. And as a result, it makes you want to do more because you get good feedback, not just from each other, exactly as you say. It's a, you know, as Phil mentioned, when you get it from a complete stranger, then you know it's worthy of something pursuing. So from that particular direction, I think we all just went, right, let's try and make something of this. We all have an interest, so push it,
So same question to number three. Paddy, how did you get started?
Well, I've been doing small press comics on and off since about the mid-90s. I had a brief period where I was putting together like photocopies, mini-comics for the UK sort of small press market, and I was selling maybe 20, 30, 40 copies of an issue. And then I kind of ran out of enthusiasm and came back to it a couple of years later and started putting on the web. Web comics had kind of got started then, but I knew nothing about them, so I just kind of, I don't know, fluked my way into it and worked out how to run a web comic by trial and error. And it seems to be going quite well, and I've collected two books of the comics that I've done. So I'm proud of the stuff I've been doing on the web. The stuff I did back in the 90s, not so much.
Well, I guess that was just kind of the introduction to how everyone started. But what we really wanted to do in this is now get into the kind of nitty-gritty and go through it maybe step by step of how you might actually go about creating your own, first of all, like small press comic, so for print. So we're going to start by maybe asking the very basic thing and the very obvious question, and maybe over-asked questions, I'm going to ask it again. Where can someone get ideas? Where do ideas come from? Or, you know, what is a good way to kind of inspire yourself for stories for comics? I'll throw that out there. So Phil, what do you think?
I was going to say I was going to start to dodge it, like, and say it's a pretty big question, I suppose. But what I was going to say, like, one thing, a practical thing, like, even before the ideas, there's a sort of a space and time issue. Like, you need some sort of a time and some sort of a place to be able to actually do stuff before you even start, I think. Like, because the ideas are grand, but it's actually the somewhere and a kind of a free period of time, you know, like, everyone's trying to kind of keep the roof above their heads and whatever, and it's trying to find that hour or two or the regular bit of time that you can actually get some work done in, like, that.
Yeah.
That in itself, I think, is, like, the first big struggle, with, and especially with comics, which are so, you know, labour-intensive,
yeah,
like.
Definitely.
And I think the ideas is nearly like the easy part in a way.
Right.
Yeah.
So is it better then to maybe like set aside a time to kind of like maybe they say in like writing fiction, like prose, and that they always say, you know, to do maybe like spend a couple of hours at it a day, or set aside an hour at least and try it every day? Is it kind of, does it work like that? Or
it's certainly a way of starting anyway.
Yeah,
yeah, I'd say a kind of a disciplined way to trying to get in a bit of space, like, you're talking about where the ideas come from. I don't know what the other people think. It's sort of an idea nearly is kind of a spontaneous thing. Like it's and recording the idea is nearly more difficult than getting the idea. That's again
conveying it, really, isn't it? It's, you know, you might have the idea, but if it's something that's in your head, but then you can't convey it into a visual format, well then it'll fall flat in its face, you know. And you have to have a beginning, middle and an end, because ultimately you want to put it into a comic format, so you have to have some continuity of a trail, you know. So the idea is great and they would do come to you thick and fast, but then whether it's a good enough idea to run with is a whole other kettle of fish, really, you know.
What's your reckon?
Well, in my case, my ideas mostly come from Irish mythology.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I also find waiting for an idea is a bad way of actually starting to do something. I mean, I don't write scripts.
Mm-hmm.
I have the basic shape of the story in my head, and the ideas as to how to tell it come to me as I do it. And I kind of throw myself into it and trust myself that I'll be able to do the job. I don't know where ideas come from. I don't think anybody does.
yes, we're looking for a scientific answer.
Yeah, I read a lot. I watch TV. I watch documentaries.
Mm.
Just pile things into my head, and they come out as ideas occasionally.
Do you read a lot of comics then? Because obviously, everyone here, I'm assuming, read comics. So from that point of view, are you drawing your inspiration from that, or
not so much anymore?
Okay.
I have noticed a page in each of these that is 100% lifted from a page by Brian Talbot. And I had no idea that I was doing that at the time. But on the whole, I don't think I'm getting... since I started doing comics, I haven't read that many.
Oh, wow. No time?
No, not really. It's just that you go into the comic shop every week and there's less and less that interests me.
Okay.
I read a fair few web comics, but I'm just not reading as much.
Yeah.
When I wasn't making my own comics, I read just about everything Vertigo did. I read half a dozen DCs and a couple of Marvels and a few Dark Horses, and I just don't bother anymore. I don't know why. I don't know whether that's a good thing or not.
Paddy kind of asked this already, but do you think it's a good idea to have a script to write a script before you start drawing a comic, or maybe you should start drawing your idea first? How would you go about that?
Well, from my point of view, having a script is a bad idea. Because whenever I've written a script that I'm happy with, I kind of think, job done. And I can't motivate myself to do anything more with it, like drawing it or anything. Actually getting the work done, it's easiest just to throw myself into it.
Right.
And work it out as we go.
Phil, I see you pulling faces at the end there. Is that
this is actually a good face.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm sort of agreeing. I actually agree with what Paddy's saying there. It's sort of like the fact, like he's kind of talking about the thing that throwing yourself into it, the thing almost makes itself, you know. I think you were asking about, is it important to do a script to create originally? It's sort of like there's a million ways to skin a cat, like, and it's actually doing something is the most important thing, I think, you know, getting something down, because you can refine it then after, and sometimes these things can end up putting hurdles in your way by saying, oh, I'm not going to do this unless I get a script, or I'm not going to do it unless the script is perfect, or I'm not going to actually start doing the script until I can get I can be drawn as perfect, you know. You can end up making hurdles, and the important thing is, like, it's actually, there are very few barriers to making your own comics. It's actually quite a low threshold of difficulty, like in terms of everything from the drawing of them to the technology that's involved in reproducing them. It's actually a low threshold. So, as Paddy mentioned there, getting stuck into it is nearly, I would say, is...
Yeah, yeah. Would you agree with that then as well?
I don't know that I would. I think it depends really on the type of comic that you're going for. I think if it's a case that you are going for the likes of a DC or a Marvel, then you do need a script and structure, because the script gives you structure. And your strength may not be in the storytelling as such, unless you have some thread. So if you enlist the help of somebody else with the script that does know what they're doing, then it gives you an opportunity to play to your strengths. And that way you can draw to the best of your ability and keep the story moving that way and concentrate on that, knowing that you've got a solid script under you. So I think that projects it. But again, if you're going for something that's more indie-based, a lot of the time that is based on reality. So it's a case of you're drawing from your experiences. So not having a script is sometimes more organic and allows for a more natural flow with the comic, and therefore will resonate quicker with somebody from an experience point of view. Mm-hmm. But it really, really does depend, and I think you have to recognise, well, what are you ultimately aiming for? Mm-hmm. So if you're aiming for action, well, then if you've no solid script with that action, it's just aimless. So it'll fall flat on its face, no matter how beautiful it might look. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you just really have to think about what it is you want to achieve at the end of it. You know?
And just about what we're talking about, scripts and that, we wanted to find out what your views were on like words versus just images in a comic, like a wordless comic versus one, you know, that will be scripted. Do you think there's any kind of advantages or disadvantages to one or the other? Like, for in terms of people starting out, would one be easier than the other? Like, you know?
I'd say that it would probably be more difficult, because you're conveying, like, as they say, a picture can have 1,000 words in it. So you're ultimately doing this on maybe 24, 36 pages. But again, it's the energy behind it, and whatever energy you have behind what you're drawing, I think it does get put onto the paper and will reflect back. So it's very difficult then to try and evoke a feeling with just a picture, if a word could get you there in an instant.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit more difficult, and I think fair play to anyone that actually tries it, you know?
What would you say?
I think there's a danger. There's an interesting thing that actually Gary Shanley's pointed out, to do with redundancy, to do with words and pictures, where I think it's Alison Bechdel you use the example of, where it's there can be a problem, and I think it's probably because comics at the moment are sort of trying to crack the whole we are an art form thing, so they tend to kind of overdo the literary aspect. But it's where the caption says, "Then I went into the house," and then you show a picture of someone going into the house. You don't need, that's redundancy. You don't actually need to do that. And that can be
saying, "I'm going into the house."
Yeah, triple redundancy. But the thing with comics is, like, the words and the pictures, it's the interplay that's and like sequences certainly of silence, and even silence over an extended period, like Mr. Amperduke being a good
example
here.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more going on in your head. And I find that sometimes they can be quite more emotional, because you're not being told. Mm-hmm. Stuff is being generated spontaneously from what happens in them. So they can be quite, they can be more stern to the emotions, like music. Because music is sort of, music can move you without having words. I don't mean lyrics of a song, but actual music can be sad or happy. And I think pictures and wordless sequences can be the same way. They can tap straight into emotion. So they both have their
advantages.
Well, for me, the pictures are primary and the words are secondary. The words are important, because there are some things you just can't do with a picture. But the pictures come first. And the sequence of pictures is the important thing for comics to me. I do enjoy doing wordless sequences, but I've often thought of doing it like an entirely wordless comic, but I never actually managed to do it. I think, though, without the words to hook people, they tend to skip over the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So you do need at least some degree of dialogue or captions or something, just to give somebody like a handhold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What would you, in terms of, so if you were going to do words, then a lot of people who we've talked to, who were just kind of had done their first comic, said they had a lot of problems with lettering and kind of layouts, because they'd left the lettering to last, and then tried to squeeze them in around the bubbles and things. So, any advice there on what to?
Well, that actually goes back to having a good script then, in the sense that if you have a good script and you're following it, it will already have done that job for you and give you an awareness in terms of what is meant to go in where. And now if you're starting off, obviously, that's going to be trial and error. So the whole point here is actually just to get into it, knee deep in it, and enjoy it. Because if you're not doing it for the fun of it, well, then don't bother,
yeah.
You know? So I think really you've got to just remain focused on, yeah, have a bit of a script if you can, even if it's only loose. You know, at least then you can go, right, okay, the lettering has to go in somewhere. And then obviously the dialogue, if there's two people in one of the panels, then at least you know, well, don't have them filling the panel. Allow for a fairly, you know, a fairly decent bit of space up at the top for lettering. But, I mean, good example, I suppose, if you cut out a balloon, a lettering balloon, and just try and place it over each of the panels to see, have you given yourself enough room? And then that'll give you an idea before you commit it to ink, you know? It's remedial, but it helps, you know?
In my earliest stuff, I would write the rough dialogue in as I was drawing, just to give an idea of how much space it would need, and then I would delete it and letter it properly in computer when I'd finished, redraft the dialogue to the standard I wanted. I don't really need to do that anymore, I just leave spaces, and I'm kind of confident that the spaces I leave are big enough for the dialogue I need, and so far it's worked out that way. So, but I think the experience of roughing the dialogue in was probably educated that
useful. Phil, anything?
No,
there?
I couldn't. I'd be sort of similar, like,
yeah,
to
right.
that. Yeah.
So,
well, I was going to say, so after that, say you have your first comic done, you know, your masterpiece, you want to start, publishing, some comic, get it published, create a few copies. So I think the best way of going on starting that is to just follow a copy it, or to go maybe do something slightly more professional and get it done.
Get it tattooed all over your body.
Yes.
Nobody will see it, and then it's done.
People want to look at it though.
It's a party piece.
When I got started, photocopying was the easiest, because generally I've worked in office jobs and I've been able to just come into the photocopier at 7 o'clock at night and but in recent years digital printing is so much cheaper and so much more available in it than printing ever used to be. PJ Holden, Belfast comic artist, about 5 or 6 years ago self-published a comic, and it was A4 size, 2 colour cover, black and white interiors, and he printed it something like 1,000 copies and it cost him £2,000, and they're still rolling in the garage. but you couldn't, because of the nature of setting up old fashioned printing, you couldn't order less than 1,000.
Right.
Whereas with digital printing, I can order 50, and it costs me maybe £75. So once I sold them, I can get another 50.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I can do colour covers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. But how easy is it then with digital printing for people who may not have a lot of experience? How would they, if we could skip back a step, just in terms of briefly on getting what you've just drawn onto the computer, is it just as easy as scanning it in for people who had just done it at home, you know, and then the process after that, maybe like if there was software involved or, you know.
Yeah, I think it's easier nowadays anyway. I think probably the kids would know a hell of a lot more than they would. I know I've only had a crash course in it the last year and a half. So from the point of view, like a lot of the time people are working on paper, I know I am, and then I will scan it in and try and finish it or tidy it up to some degree. But the packages that I would use, say most people probably use Photoshop, I'm using Corel Painter 10, but again it's only from a cleaning it up point of view. And then I'd use Publisher to position the pages so that I could actually print them off if I wanted to see if they're working out okay or if they're pixelated. But generally speaking, I mean, you know, saving them at a decent DPI once you scan them in, like 300 if it's colour for minimum. You know, if you're doing it yourself and you're only starting off 150 DPI, and then after that it's a case of then messing about and seeing what works. And if you have a printer at home, which most kids would have, it's printing it off and just seeing. And you don't have to do it in A4, you can do it in A5 or smaller. You know, and that makes life easier for you. It means that you get a bit of practice in, you see how it's done, and you see what the process is. And a lot of it is practice, practice, practice. You do it once, then you know what went wrong the first time, and you can improve from there. You do it again, you know, hopefully you don't make the same mistakes, or you do. Then you go into the third time. But it's more cost effective, I think, these days, than it has been previously.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So it's easier to practice in
absolutely.
That sense, you know.
And then if you wanted to take a step up after that, if you wanted to go to like a digital printer, like say one in town, like whatever, Pronto Print or Snap or whatever, what's the kind of process there? A lot of them usually only accept like a PDF copy, and how kind of difficult is it to kind of negotiate with, say, you know, a small publisher you can go in and talk to, you know?
Well, I use a printer in Bristol called the Fallen Angel. And they accept whatever format I give them, really. I mean, I save them as TIFFs, upload the individual page files to on an FTP account, and Mallory prints them off, and they come out lovely.
Yeah.
I understand that if I was to go to a more like a high speed printer, for example, or a more traditional printer, they would ask for a PDF. So I would need to get the software to produce a single PDF of all the images. Which I don't have at the minute, but like I say, digital printing means it's so much more versatile. I mean, you can give people images in all sorts of different formats that they're able to use.
Phil, I know you have you've got it down to like an art form of doing some of your comics in terms of how you put them together.
Yeah.
So would you have any?
Well, to be honest, like, it's because most of the stuff I have, like, it's A5 photocopy, and that's purely, like, I'm actually looking at what's the least amount of hassle to produce the thing.
Yeah.
So I'm going A5 page in the end, and I'm working backwards. I'm going, if I do an A4, I don't have to do two, I have to can scan one page, reduce it to A5. It's sort of, see, the thing with the printing and the scanning, it's kind of a question of knowledge, really. Like, no matter what you're drawing is like, it's sort of just a case of gathering, gaining the knowledge to scan, and, you know, anyone can do that part of it. I mean, it's unfortunate because there isn't really a lot of information in one place. There's a place, myself and Paddy are always chatting about, redink.com. They have this guide to reproduction on their website, a PDF, and that is the best primer, like, I would recommend anyone. It's redink, that's redink.com. You can put a link.
Yeah.
And that has a sort of a PDF on there it just explains a little bit about how printing works. And the best thing on it, though, it explains about scanning pages, about how to scan things at 600 dpi and, you know, turn them into 1200 dpi bitmap files. And that's the first time I did that, and I got a super sharp image, I was like, Jesus. Like, I started blowing away, because it's just that difference in quality. And you can achieve it at home. Like, as I said earlier, like, the actual barrier, technology-wise, to produce some good-looking stuff is, you know, for very little. Like, I mean, I printed on a laser printer, is quite low. The other thing to remember is, no matter how, you know, no matter what you make, it's only ever as, you know, and no matter how well you print it, it's only ever as good as the thing is itself anyway. Like, you can't polish a turd to kind of put it, you know, if it's no good, it's not going to be better because you've printed it, you know, in a mega printer. Like,
yeah.
So that is the thing to remember. Like, you know, when you're starting out, maybe you're better not, I'm not saying you're producing turds now, but maybe you're better saving your money, you know, doing, you know, you can do it cheaply and well rather than, you know, end up with 1,000 copies in your basement,
exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Avoid that.
Yeah.
What about tablets? I know, again, a lot of people we talk to have managed to find out second-hand tablets, or even, you know, relatively cheaply priced. So what would your recommendation be over, you know, traditional kind of hand-drawn stuff, and just scan it in as opposed to drawing it straight onto...
Do you draw straight onto the tablet, or do you use
I'm sort of a paper person. I wouldn't be against them. I've seen a lot of really good results on tablets. I just sort of, I love working with a page. That's part of the pleasure of drawing for me, is kind of drawing on a page with a pen and ink. And like, I like doing the lettering on the page as well, but that's personal. I don't see any Like, I don't see why not, and it certainly cuts down a lot of it. You don't have to scan, obviously. Yeah. That's the biggest thing, and you know, you can tweak till you're blue in the face. But the thing that always worries me, like, if there was a nuclear war and there was an electromagnetic pulse on your hard drive, you'd be
screwed.
Oh, you could put that in, of course. There was just on it, there was one. Was the chap Disraeli was there at the 2D thing this year, and he was chatting about the thing, and it never struck me that he draws on a tablet, so he says the originals are actually the printed comic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because it doesn't exist outside the thing, so when it's printed in the printers, he might never see a proof, or he might print off a thing, but when he gets it in his hand, the actual comic, that's the original art, you know, which is an interesting way of looking at it.
I think a lot of people use it now. Like, you see so many kids that are into manga in the last while, and there are so many, like, manga studios seems to be quite common in the last while. You know, I think more and more people are beginning to use the tablets straight rather than the paper and pencil. Now, I personally would prefer, I use both, so I'll scan something in and then I'll finish it off, colour it using the tablet. But most people will start with that. And it's easier for them. The only problem, I think, and we've encountered it today with Tommy, is you become addicted to it. No, anyway. So
we're looking at Tommy Kelly.
Yeah, we are. But you can become dependent on it. Now, this is only my own opinion. I would feel that you could easily become dependent on it and lose touch with the way of actually drawing in certain ways if it's correcting some of the errors that you're doing, like if you're doing a shaky line and all of a sudden it corrects it for you, well then how do you know if you're doing the shaky line? Do you know that kind of way? So I think it gives you a false sense of security, and I think practice is always the best, and with the paper and pencil, until you feel that you are confident, and then let that assist you to make your artwork better. That's personal opinion.
Yeah. Paddy, what's your weapon of choice?
I have a pen and paper around as well. I have a tablet that I use for cleaning up artwork. Once I scanned it, like tip X marks and stuff like that, I can remove, and I can colour covers with it. But I like the feel of the pen on paper,
mm-hmm.
and I've tried drawing with a tablet, and it just doesn't work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not for me.
Right. All right. Well, so say you have your comic is done now. It's gone to the printers. It's printed out. You know, all that heartache is gone on. It's done and dusted, but it's only just begun.
Yeah.
So now it needs shelf space. So again, we're talking about small press. So how would one go about getting it into a shop? Say, like, even the only experience that I would know of in terms of is really the Dublin shops, but maybe we'll be able to enlighten us on other ones. But they all seem pretty helpful in getting your stuff on the shelves.
You know,
yeah, it's getting it off the shelf. I think it's selling the damn thing.
Well, I haven't actually put my products in any shops.
Right.
I sell it over the website. I sell it at cons. And I don't know. I mean, the people who go to comic shops generally aren't looking for the stuff that I do. And I don't really mean, there are shelves that this kind of material sits on and doesn't move. So to be honest, I'm not really that fussed about getting my comics into comic shops. I'm sure it could be done, but I don't know how to do it.
Right. Does anyone else know?
You walk in and you ask, simple as
yeah.
that. You just walk in and ask, mm-hmm. and you strike a deal with them. But ultimately, you know, the focus is on, if you're focusing on trying to move them as quickly as possible, then the cons seem to be the best opportunity, because you're going to have more people walking through the doors. Whereas if they're sitting on a shelf, it really does depend on where they're positioned, whether or not people are actually going to market them for you. So you're depending on another person there, so you can't depend on that really. So I think really just focus on cons. The web seems to be one of the best options as well. Easy to distribute. You know, it's much cheaper. If you have a ton of them there, straight away, or if you've only a few, then it means that you can print off as you need, you know. So it does, it works out, it's more efficient, I think, that way, you know.
Phil, you sell your comics as well on line, and I think I might have, I hope I'm not misquoting you, but I think you probably said before that you don't really bother too much with the comic shops.
It's not, well, it's not because they don't work, it's more like laziness, to be quite honest. It's just tracking it and all. They actually work very well, and in fairness, Sub City and Forbidden Planet here in town like do have sections, and I know that stuff does shift.
That weird poster behind the poster.
Yeah, that poster can be, it's sort of like a dimensional warp that you have to go through. You think of it that way rather than a poster. You can get stuff. I'm not always so sure. I kind of like the idea of them being in places. I know Tower, for instance, Tower Records did have a stall for a while, and I sort of like the idea of getting them into a position where people who wouldn't normally go for comics would be able to get their hands on them. Like on the web, even like you're talking about someone that's looking for them already. It's not like it's difficult. I know, like the Wind and Stare, I think as well does stuff now and again. Again, these are all places that you know that wouldn't traditionally be a comics reader's place. But cons are probably the one of the places that you will most, because you're talking, you've got an enthusiastic audience and a lot of people that are there. I mean, there's an element of hobbyism as well, you're talking to people that are into comics themselves, and like a lot of people that buy them actually do them too. So that, you know, you're talking about markets really, in a way, aren't you? Yeah.
And you also don't have to restrict yourself to comic cons.
Yeah.
And my stuff is anthology based. This summer I went to an academic conference on the Ulster cycle at the University of Ulster at Coleraine, and I made a lot of readers there.
Cool.
So if you're doing a comic that is not necessarily in the traditional sort of comic shop market, you can find other markets.
Yeah. Car boot sale as well. It depends where you live in as well.
Right.
Tommy Kelly, we'll bring him in again, he does Road Crew.
Yeah.
And an awful lot of his readers don't come in from comic readers, they come in from rock fans.
So we've got to go to more gigs.
But you can also go to music fairs and stuff.
Yeah.
That's another sort of
element.
Yeah. Like the comic thing is kind of closed.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to really get out there. Like everyone who reads comics, you're not really going to make any more fans, especially with the comic industry is now. You're not making kids as fans.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, what is it, the 18 to 25 year old is the staff who reads comics, and that's only going to get older, you know. So you can have the franchise. Well, it's great for that because you're not limited to
Absolutely. People
who just read comics, you're limited to your top.
Well,
the shops as well, though, is that it's a niche within a niche.
Yeah.
It's like, I met somebody yesterday and he said, how long does it take to make a comic? I said, a month. He says, is that all? And he said, oh, where'd you get them? Shops? Like, yeah. So even though there's comic shops, and then you've got that, and then you've got people who like to sort of publish stuff within that other niche.
Yeah.
You know, it's very small market they're trying to sell to.
Yeah. Well, I guess then, while we're on the web then, because that's what we're supposed to be discussing as well, so let's segue smoothly into that. What are the advantages of web over print in comics? So I imagine there's less hassle, I would imagine, but maybe not.
I haven't tried it yet, I have to say, but I imagine it would be cheaper and you probably stand a better chance of people taking you up on it. I mean, from a point of view, like I have everything on eBay there even, and there's nothing shifting. So I mean, it really just depends, it's hit and miss, but from a webcomic point of view, I can only imagine it would be very successful. Same as if you downloaded to your phone, you know, if you had a little comic strip that way, that's where the kids are going in relation to, that's where they'll spend their money. So if you're in it to make money, then that would probably be the way to go.
Well, Paddy, you have a lot of experience.
I serialise my comics on the web and I don't make any money out of it at all. But, there's two good functions for it for me. One, it helps me get the work done because I know people are waiting for it. If it was just produced, wait until I had a complete comic finished and printed before I could sell it, I kind of lose my motivation. And it takes me months and months and months to get any work done. If I know people are waiting for a new page every week, then I have something under me to actually get the work done. Second thing is you can build an audience. If I was to do a single comic, wait until it was finished, get it printed, nobody would have any idea about it. Mm. Wouldn't know what it was, where to get it, whether they like it or not. But if you put it on the web and you promote it in all of our different venues, comic venues, mythology venues, anything that's anywhere where you think you might be able to find readers, Wikipedia even. I get hits from Wikipedia most days. It builds you the audience. When I was doing comics in the 90s, photocopying them, taking them to the cons, selling them in mail order, I wouldn't sell more than 40 copies of each. And that's over a period of several years. But this way, I mean, I've sold over 100 copies of the Cultivate of Curly already, and I get maybe 150, 200 hits a day on the website. So I've got lots of readers. Maybe not enough readers to make any kind of money yet, but I've got more readers than I ever had before. And the web makes it a bit possible for that.
What's your experience, Phil? You had Wayslave, was that a web comic?
It was connected with a sort of a weekly newsletter. So yeah, but it was Paddy saying there. It's sort of like a case of it's your broadcasting to some extent. Like when you have a comic and the whole thing of the regularity and like you know. With Tommy's comic, you get it in your inbox every day or whatever, so there's a sort of a constant reminder. And I think with the web comics, it's actually the secondary things that you can make, like the collected versions of it and t-shirts connected with it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certain, like there's people like making livings off it, very good livings from the web. It's certainly a way of going. I think it's a different experience of reading, I think, as well, but it's not. I don't think that's a bad thing either. Like,
well, Warren Ellis has described it as Freak Angels. He's described it as a TV model, where TV companies will spend all the money to put a TV show on air for nothing, and then people who like it will buy the DVD. And I'm kind of working on the same principle.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the web for nothing, and if you like it, you can buy a permanent version of it as a book.
Very good.
How would you go about building a web presence or become more popular on the web? Building, would you consider putting all comics up on your website to get readers in there?
I have done. To be honest with you, I wouldn't. It's one thing I wouldn't know a huge amount about. I have to be straight up on it. Like I think the biggest thing I find anyway, I know with stuff that is regular, is stuff I would go back to on the web, whether it's on like a regular blog post or I get an email, like that definitely makes a big difference to the reading. Again, but that's pretty grueling as well, I'm sure, on the labour side. I couldn't add an awful lot, sorry.
Well, from my point of view, a page a week is not a particularly onerous thing.
Yeah.
No, that's realistic.
And having said that, there are times when I've missed my deadlines. And I've had other things in my life that have distracted me, and I haven't got a page up that week. And you just put up a post saying, apologising for it and saying I'll be back next week. And as long as you don't do it too often, I think you get away with it.
Yeah, well I think it really depends on what are your other commitments. You know, I mean, when you look at it, most people that are involved in comics are not involved 100% of the time. They're doing it as a passion, something that they love to do, but it's ultimately a secondary thing to their own life. They're working, they're earning a living, they're trying to, you know, pay their mortgage or their rent. So from that point of view, it's like, you know, moving into the comics thing, it's when you have the time, when you have the commitment. So the regularity that's required for a website or a blog spot or the web comic then would take up so much of your time that you really have to see, well, have you got the ability to commit to that 100%?
Yeah.
You know, now if you're younger and you're able to do that, that's fantastic. But you've got to recognise that it is a job. It is something that you have to commit to and you have to persevere with it. But if you're loving doing it, then it doesn't feel like that, you know. So I think you really just have to be aware that anything to do with comics, I think, just can take so much of your time. But when, you know, it is something that you're not in it unless you really, really love it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you don't notice that time going, you just enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, well, that kind of brings us full circle there, I think. We were going to throw it open a little bit, like throw it out there into the crowd.
Wait, the moment.
Questions, but I'm looking out here, I'm seeing everybody is kind of mostly comic artists and writers. Anyway, but
where do your ideas come from?
Very droll. Or even if anyone had any thoughts or anything to add, if we've
Eight thought.
Eight thought.
Colin Maloney, I've never met him.
No.
Well, he's found a good way around having to draw every day.
Yes.
The wheel spinning hamster there.
Yes.
And it's fucking hilarious. Brilliant. Brilliant.
You get somebody else to draw this up.
He just uses like the
snake fingers or like
fingers. Very cool.
Yeah, look, the gents, ladies, you know,
We were actually talking earlier on, I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you used to read Louisville, like on off days when he's busy doing whatever his graphic design things, he uses the same gags from Louisville. He uses the characters and thinks nobody will notice. We notice that. Now everybody knows.
One of my favourite webcomics, XKCD, is done with stick figures. And occasionally he'll put his stick figures in front of this absolutely gorgeously rendered colour background. So it's not because he can't draw. It's just that this is like a shorthand that works well for his humour.
Yeah, yeah.
Maeve does actually. You do the webcomic. Yeah. How are you finding that?
I'm running late this week, so I'll receive emails. Yeah. Accused of a lot of things. I looked in the past. Seriously, if people accuse me of like being allowed to pick it this week, it's late.
Yeah.
No. I'm just my stalker. It's brilliant. I like doing it. Like, I think I told you, I started doing it because I was doing animation and I'd spent 3 years making one film and left it crazy. So I started doing the comic really to do something that I finished regularly and on a weekly basis. So it's like it's a day out of every week, and so often that means an overnight, to be honest. So it's nine. Double page spread a week, and it's
that's 2 pages, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 2 pages, and so I've got it properly finished. So it's 8 to 9 hours a week to do. But I really like it, and
it's worth it, isn't it? It's really satisfying. I mean, do you, the rest of you find that it's just deeply satisfying?
Well, so when you're doing it, you're giving head to yourself.
Yeah. I'm like a headbanger.
And then you finish it, and it's I really like it. I mean, you're doing like other projects and other work, you've one thing every week that's done, and then I get a lot of reaction to it and stuff, and then I get people begging to be able to put the odd person in it. Horrible, nasty cameos. But I really like it, and like usually the ones where I'm drawing and laughing at myself, so they're really awful ones, and then the ones I think are crap off, and you look back later on and go, it's like I the same as Paddy though. Like I started doing it, committed to doing it weekly because it means that you develop it really quickly. Like there's no way I could find the time to do. I've done 80 of them so far. There's no way I could find time to do 80 double page spreads of that quality if I try to find time separately. Whereas do it every week, you just have to get it done. And also the style. Like the first 6 months, the difference between the first one and the one about 6 months in is like hugely different.
Yeah.
Much, much better. The characters got much better. It's much easier to write. I don't even think about it anymore. I just kind of something happens to me, or I come up with a scenario and then they react.
Excellent.
So it's not to that
point. Isn't it interesting as well? I think the thing you've got to recognise as well, that when people are producing a comic, if you're doing it on your own, you are effectively going to end up doing the job of 7 people. You know, you've got the layouts, you've got the lettering, you've got the colouring, you've got the production value, you know, you've got the cover, the back, everything, basically. And
I
you've got to
recognise.
But that's something you do have to recognise if you're starting out. And I don't mean that to sound kind of like, oh my God, I'll never get it done. You do get it done. You definitely do. And it's the sense of satisfaction at the end of the day of having that comic in your hand going, yay, I finished it. Oh my God, blood, sweat and tears, whatever. It's there. That's invaluable, you know, and that's what keeps you going.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's about all the time we have for this week. But hopefully that's been, and I'm sure it has, of help to anyone aspiring to be in a small press, a webcomic. That is what this panel was supposed to be about. And it was, I think, largely. So thank you very much to Paddy, Hillary, and Phil, and
thank
everybody
you.
Here. Thank you. We're back.
Yeah, that was our panel. What about that?
Yeah, we should do it live every week.
It's
so
easy
having an audience.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Although we can't edit ourselves, which is I was really afraid I'd say something really kind of, I don't know.
So instead, you just didn't say much at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It was like yeah, it, just don't be racist. Don't be racist. So, yeah, I think it went pretty well.
Yeah, it did. I kind of wanted people to heckle us a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been awesome. But everyone there was actually very nice.
Yes, they were very nice, so very polite,
that
very
was good.
Supportive.
That was good as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so I guess well, that's the end of that.
Yeah, that is the end of that. We will be back literally next week.
Yes.
With our regular talkie podcast.
Yeah, we'll have lots of stuff to talk about, I'm sure.
Yes, comics. Mainly.
And then, yeah, an interview the following week after that. So it's going to be a trifecta of...
A trifecta? Yes. Is that an actual word?
Yeah.
Is
I don't know if I've used it.
Trilogies should actually be called?
No, trilogies should be called trilogies.
What's the one that shouldn't be called?
Quadrilogies.
Oh, quadrilogies. That's a made up word.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to get a lot of Comic-Cast time for your Comic-Cast dollar this month. So please tune in next week and the following week. yeah. Thanks. Good night.
Bye.
Satellite's gone up to the skies. Things like that drive me out of my mind. I watched it for a little while. I like to watch things on TV. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. Satellite's gone way up to Mars. Soon it'll be filled with parking cars. I watched it for a little while. I love to watch things on TV. Satellite of love. You've been bold with Harry, Mark, and John. Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday through Thursday with Harry, Mark, and John. Satellite's gone up to the skies. Things like that drive me out of my mind. Watched it for a little while. I love to watch things on TV. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. Satellite of love. Satellite of love.